for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
From the fifth chapter of Galatians we hear, "If we live in the Spirit, let us walk in the Spirit." Heavenly Father, we know that to walk in the Spirit is a good spiritual exercise, the exercise of love, joy, peace, gentleness, and faith. The exercise of daily prayer and meditation on your word helps to create a spiritual climate that ensures health of our souls and vigor in our daily living. So grant us this day fruits of the Spirit along with your abiding presence as we seek to serve you in this place. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
A real nice guy. Mark and I are great friends. Senator from the first. A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 45th.
Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees. You have one, Senator?
I do.
Send it forward. It's from what committee?
Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send it forward. Read the committee report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 177, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 165 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 147 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 118 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 116 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 81 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 60 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 59 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been duly enrolled and that the printed copies furnished has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 54 begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 29 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Joint Resolution 10 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the joint resolution has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 9 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
The committee report has been read, Senator, from 23rd.
President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, formal calendar.
Senate Bills for Perfection, the formal calendar, Senator from the 15th, Senate Bill 390.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 390 be taken up before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us for perfection.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move forward the perfection of Senate Bill 390. Mr. President, 100 years ago, St. Louis was the fourth largest city in the country. And it wasn't because of the weather. It was because of its location. St. Louis was located on a major trade artery at the time, the Mississippi River, for goods flowing northward and southward. As goods flowed from a largely uninhabited west to the east, and as folks moved from the east to a largely uninhabited west, St. Louis was that location. It was a trade hub. What also happened around 100 years ago, there's a much celebrated bridge in St. Louis called the Eads Bridge. And the Eads Bridge is architecturally significant. The arches that are below the Eads Bridge were the inspiration for the Gateway Arch, recognizing St. Louis's role in the gateway to the west. When you go to Busch Stadium, the arches on the Eads Bridge are replicated in the light standards. In many ways, those arches have defined St. Louis. But the sad truth about the Eads Bridge is that it probably came about 20 years too late. A sleepy little town in northern Illinois that was recovering from a fire recognized the next mode of transportation and the significance of the railroad. And while St. Louis's economy had been based on the steamboat and the river for a generation, those same interests were reluctant to adopt the next mode of transportation and commerce, the railroad. Chicago seized on it, became the rail hub, and the rest is history. The two cities' trajectories have been defined by that moment in history ever since. In many ways, the same attributes that St. Louis had at the time, St. Louis still has. There's nothing especially unique about our state geographically. But for our location, we are centrally located. We have a number of great assets going for us. We have a good highway network. We have a good, we're situated on the Mississippi River. St. Louis is about as far north as you can go without the Mississippi River freezing. That is actually significant as the Panama Canal is widening. We have an underutilized airport. We have capacity. We have land. I grew up in Bridgeton, in the shadow of that airport, and I can tell you that I grew up in a very middle-class family, and I can tell you that many of those middle-class neighborhoods were torn down to make way for this billion-dollar runway that sits vacant. So all of these assets work in our favor as we talk about international trade and our location and the opportunity that we have. There's been a lot of discussion over the last few years about what's been referred to as the big idea. And through a lot of hard work, through a lot of important people, to get us at the point that we're at now, where this opportunity could possibly be realized, where our underutilized airport, with the ability for St. Louis to, for other cities to get to St. Louis in a reasonable amount of time, Memphis, Dallas, Oklahoma City, Kansas City, Omaha, Nashville, it's easier to get to St. Louis from those cities than it is from Chicago. And so all of those things working to our advantage have put us in this position right now to establish an international cargo hub. And the opportunity is a real one. And it would give us an opportunity to have a place in global trade. To put that in perspective, the city of Chicago has 26 flights a week to Asia. St. Louis has zero. We just simply don't have that as part of our economy. And so how do you capture, how do you become a player in this game, where the economic impact, if anybody's ever flown to O'Hare and seen the miles and miles of warehousing and facilities and manufacturing base and assembly facilities, if you've ever seen it, that's what we're talking about. But Chicago is the incumbent. Okay? It's safe. That's where the cargo goes right now. And so Senate Bill 390 is our offer sheet to the world. And there's been a lot of talk about this being a China hub, and that opportunity is real. The largest trading partner in the world is sitting on the other side of the table. But there's other opportunities with South Africa and South America who've made inquiries recently because of this legislation that's been getting some coverage. So how do you do it? How do you unseat the incumbent that is Chicago? Well, there's two principal pieces of this bill. The first is, there's people in this chain of commerce referred to as freight forwarders. Their job is, if you've got a business in Omaha and you want your goods sold in Shanghai next Thursday at noon, you don't do all that yourself. You don't hire the trucking company. You don't book the flight. You don't do all those things that takes it to go from portal to portal. You hire somebody to do it, and they're called freight forwarders. Well, right now, those freight forwarders send those goods to Chicago, where they're consolidated with other goods, and they're sent overseas. So the first part of this bill is to give it what's called an air export tax credit to those freight forwarders to divert those goods that currently go to Chicago to St. Louis. That'll get us started. That'll give us the opportunity to actually have some planes landing. Okay, and it'll start out with a couple of flights a week. But we got to get to a point where we have 5 to 7 flights a week. Because they know right now in Chicago, if they miss one flight on Monday, there's another flight on Tuesday. They don't have to wait 10 days. So we're incenting the people who are making the decisions in this process to bring their goods to St. Louis to be flown overseas. And it's a real opportunity for Missouri exports. The second piece of this, which should be referred to as the sustainability piece of this, is to have the infrastructure, to incent the facilities to locate around the airport within a 50-mile radius, opening up the region to this kind of global trade. Those are manufacturing facilities. Those are assembly facilities. Those are distribution facilities. Those are cold chain facilities. Now, what's a cold chain? It's a refrigerated warehouse. For a lot of our agricultural products, where there is a market, a deep market, a growing market in Asia and other parts of the world, where they wanted a food insurance policy, we are in the heart of the Midwest, the center of the center. And time and speed matters in this world. If you can get your goods fresh, flown overseas in a matter of hours, there's a premium paid for that. And there's no better place to go to see that activity than St. Louis. Like I said, you can get to more places from St. Louis than you can from Chicago. That's our locational advantage. But like I said, they are the incumbent. We need to unseat the incumbent. And before you ever get, and I want to talk a minute about some of the accountability that's built in here. And I've served in this body for a few years now. I understand the discussions we've had with regard to incentive programs and the accountability that we need. You only get a credit on the export if you're actually exporting goods. You're sending those chargeable kilos in cargo planes overseas. So we're getting the activity we're desiring. The second piece of it, and I would put this up against any tax credit program that we got on the books, before you ever receive any benefit, and your tax liability is reduced. You got to build the building. And to put that in perspective, these buildings are big buildings, $80 a square foot, the size that you need. These are $20, $25 million buildings. You got to build the building, make the investment in our region. You got to operate. You're employing people. You got to have a significant percentage of your activity related to the importing and exporting of goods through the airport before you can ever redeem one of those credits. So we're looking at a few years down the road for any impact in that regard. And if we get it, we'll have the economic activity that we just simply don't have in the state. We don't have those facilities. We don't have that manufacturing base. We don't have those assembly plants. We don't have those distribution networks. We don't have those cold chain facilities. And if they come here, we want them to come here. And the region and the state doesn't look like anything as it currently looks right now. In many ways, a lot of our misfortune as a state, as a region in St. Louis, has led to this opportunity, has put us on the runway, if you will. We've got the mistake that we talked about 100 years ago with ceding our God-given place as the transportation logistical hub of the Midwest to Chicago. We drove off FedEx decades ago because we had so much passenger traffic. Well, we don't have that problem now, folks. Okay? We didn't want the cargo planes flying 24/7 into Lambert because we had a lot of residential around it. We don't have that problem either. We bought out all those families. So we got the land, we got the capacity, we have the facilities. I represent a part of St. Louis County that includes Fenton, that includes the Chrysler plant. Nothing could be more emblematic of our prior economy than the shutdown Chrysler plant at the intersection of Highway 44 and 270. When you drive by it, it is a huge black hole in our regional economy. The economic activity that used to flow in and out of there every day was an engine. Now it sits vacant and, in fact, being torn down. That's 300 acres that is connected by its own power generator, its own rail network. At the intersection of Highway 270 and 44, there are opportunities for that location by opening up the region to global investment. There are opportunities for the old Hazelwood plant, Park 370 in St. Charles. Over a dozen areas that are considered blighted in many ways are opened up. And we are, make no mistake about it, putting a big poster on the wall, Mr. President, that we want St. Louis International Airport open for business. A lot of what we do, and as the chair of that committee, believe me, I share this sentiment with many of my colleagues. A lot of what we do in economic development is we're moving pieces around, right? One side of the chessboard to the other. We have a good year versus Kansas. We have a bad year versus Kansas. We have a good year versus Illinois. We have a bad year versus Illinois. We're moving things around. And as much as I believe we have to compete for those jobs that we have and that we can attract, this is new. This is new investment. This is new capital. These are new jobs. These are new industries that we just don't have in our state. And we got to start talking about growth in this chamber, okay? I understand the desire to address each and every one of these programs and agree with it and to make them better, to make reductions where we see fit. And there is no one silver bullet. I've said it before. I'll say it again. We have to take a silver buckshot approach to economic development and seize those opportunities as they come. But there can be nothing bigger than opening ourselves up to the world. The history of the world has been marked by civilizations and cities that have availed themselves to the new transportation modes, the new modes of commerce. Whether it was the leather and the donkey with Jerusalem, okay? Whether it was the ports of Lisbon or Boston, whether it was the river cities like St. Louis, whether it was the rail hubs like Chicago, whether it was the highways of Los Angeles, But flying above them all now are jet aircraft, carrying goods, just-in-time goods, that need to go from one place to the next, collapsing the distance and the time that separates Dallas from Dubai and St. Louis to Shanghai. There's something that sociologists refer to as the elastic mile. A mile is always the same amount of feet, the distance. But the speed in which you travel that distance is what we measure it by. It's what we measure efficiency by. And in the air cargo world, if you're sending something by plane, it's expensive, it's unique, it's perishable. If you're sending other goods, something that needs to be on the shelves in December, it doesn't really matter much if it gets there in March, April, or May. You'll send it by ocean, you'll send it by truck, you'll send it by rail to get there. But when you're sending something that needs to be there next Friday, and it's perishable, and it needs to stay cold, you're going to pay a premium for air cargo. And that is the direction of the world economy. And so the question we have is, do we want a place? Do we want a place at the table? Do we want those routes, and do we want the conjunction of those routes in Missouri? China Cargo, the airline that Lambert is dealing with directly, they're making a move. They want to expand. They want to get bigger. They want to have more trade with the United States. And those export opportunities, like I said, for Missouri goods, Missouri agricultural products, for a rising middle class in China that's paying $90 for a steak is real. And they're going to do it, okay? Because Chicago has a lot of problems. Chicago has reached its capacity. There's delays. This one airline alone loses $1 million a year sitting on the runway waiting to take off, okay? There is an incentive for them to move. And they want room to grow. And we've got room to grow. But there's got to be a path. We don't have the infrastructure surrounding our airport. We don't have those facilities. It doesn't make much sense. And we might get to pat ourselves on the back with a couple of flights a week, and then after 18 months, they go away. And that will have been a huge mistake. Because when they move, they're moving once, and they won't do it again. Okay? And if our plan doesn't work, they're going somewhere else. So we have to have a path to sustainability. And the beauty of it for us is, those are our assets. Those are our assets for our state. Those are our jobs. Those are the folks that are assembling high-tech equipment, high-paid engineers, as parts come from other parts of the world. That's the assembly facility in Fenton that will be building windmills from parts of the world as a statement of our new economy. Those are our folks driving the trucks, distributing goods from all points of the United States from St. Louis. This is an opportunity that is looking us right in the face. It'll provide increased access and reach into global markets for Missouri agricultural products, manufacturing, while drawing in new trade and investment and jobs into Missouri that we don't have. The Act takes a global view of cargo, of airports, of commercial interests and activity to go from 2 flights a week to 20 flights a week. More incoming flights lead to reduced shipping costs, more competitively priced Missouri exports, leading to greater global demand for Missouri products. China Cargo has about 15% of the share right now in Chicago. The consolidation that's happening over there is basically Shanghai's airliner. They want to go to 50%, and they're going to do it somewhere. And they want to come here, and they're watching. And it's time for us to have those other discussions. But it's also time for us to start talking about growth and start talking about new jobs and new economies and new opportunities. And whether or not we can break through some of the differences that often divide us, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, St. Louis City, St. Louis County, urban, rural, this is about growth. This is about growing the pie. All I've ever known in the legislature are reductions, okay? We're going to live within our means, and we're going to balance the budget. But I want to start having the conversation about growth. Nothing could be more real than the opportunity that's looking at us right now. And next session, we want to wait. This is the only bill like this in the country right now, okay? Somebody else is going to do it, whether it's Indianapolis, whether it's another city. Somebody's going to land this cargo, and somebody's going to be the distribution network. Somebody's going to send the goods back. Why not us? We've got all these assets, okay, that have been a problem for us. In many ways, in an ironic twist, they're black eyes for us. And with a lot of what we deal with in economic development, like I said, we're moving things around. We're talking about buggy whips, okay? And the Model T is rolling out. Are we going to be on board with that? What I find interesting is there's a mural up here. Senator Thomas Hart Benton, Missouri's first senator. In that mural, in the mid-1800s, what he's talking about, and the man gave very long speeches, what he's talking about is the rail opportunity from St. Louis to the Pacific. It's time for Missouri to have a place. That's what he's arguing. Saying, look, folks, the railroads are coming. It's the 1850s, okay? We got a lot of challenges as a country. We're approaching a civil war. There's a lot of strife. We are a state divided. But here's an opportunity for us to have a place, and it's the railroad. We missed that opportunity. And I hope at some point we hear those echoes and understand the opportunity that we have with air cargo, with the next mode of transporting goods. Look, when everybody buys things now, they want it now. Things are expensive, and the market is bigger than just Missouri. It's bigger than just the Midwest. It's bigger than our country. It's bigger. These are global economies now we're talking about. These are goods. These are trade routes. These are direct trade routes that can run through St. Louis, that don't run through St. Louis right now. And in many ways, what we're trying to do, we've done before. The rise of St. Louis originally had to do with our location and being in the middle of a new form of commerce as goods traveled along a river. That's what we're saying right now, is we understand, we have the foresight to recognize our locational advantage, and we're putting forth a path. And we're not reducing anybody's tax liability until they build something, until they're operating, until we're getting the economic activity that we don't have right now in our state. And like I said, we've got to get out of the mindset, we're never going to cut our way into prosperity, okay? We got to grow. We got to grow the pie, and this presents a real opportunity, a very real opportunity for us to seize the moment and lead. And I hope we do that. Mr. President?
Senator from the 8th.
Require the senator from the 24th.
Does the senator from the 24th yield?
I do yield.
He yields, you may inquire.
Senator, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Thank you for accepting the inquiry. You and I have been working on this a lot, talking about this a lot. We have different backgrounds, and I just wanted to get your perspective on what this can mean, the opportunity
sure.
that sits in front
sure.
of us.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, Senator, I want to thank you for having the courage to bring this forward. We all know this is a year where you have difficult decisions to make in the body, and that we have an inordinate number of tax credit programs that we are trying to take up some type of reform. So the easiest thing for you to do this year would be to pass on this and to not bring up something that could easily be conceived as the wrong place at the wrong time. When I consider this, first of all, as an outsider looking in until this year, as an ordinary citizen, you look at all the goings-on down here, specific to tax credit programs, and you see the implementation of those in your local neighborhoods, and it just seemed like we were consistently doing is just, we're just moving you know, Home Depot from one city to the next, or we are creating supply of homes in one part of the state versus another part of the state, or a supply of low-income housing options in one part of the state versus another part of the state. And again, as an outsider looking in, you wondered, especially in all those very, very strong years in the economy, that what was the point? That the economy was doing well all by itself, that economic activity was happening in our state and in our country and in the globe, and what was the purpose of an economic incentive? Who needed it? Things were going great. I think in 2011, it's clear to more people today than at any other time in our history that we are part of a global economy. In the formation of our country in the 19th and 20th century, it was interesting. We were the manufacturing engine of the globe. The economy was a global economy. Western Europe knew it. England knew it. Because everything was being built and made and manufactured here and traded all around the globe. And I think now, in the 21st century, in 2011, we more so than any other time in our history understand that perspective from this perspective, which is we see global trade occurring, and we recognize the fact that we're not a big enough part of it as a country. I don't know if you saw the news today. It was announced by Toyota that they were going to have to lay off 25,000 of their employees here in the United States because they're unable to supply those employees, those plants, with the necessary parts to continue construction. So I know that our friends here at Jeff City and the Ford dealership are excited with that news. But what that suggests more than anything is the fact, and it shows us evidence of just how global the world is. We all of us bemoan our trade imbalance. We as a country are trying to find ways to solve for that. It's a priority in our country. And as much as we might want our imports to decrease, it's going to be contingent upon our ability to export that I think that gap is narrowed. When I consider this legislation, I look at it from both the macro sense and the micro sense. And the macro sense to me is the vision for this. This is what the big picture is. And as much as we're focusing on the here and the now, I like to contemplate what this would look like if successful 20 years from now. You mentioned, on your way to Chicago, I can't stand going to Chicago, by the way. The airport's so darn far away from where I need to go. And it's so boring, the miles and miles and miles of those warehouses that surround O'Hare. And if you've ever gotten lost or tried to return a rental car, it's a horrible place to be. But what those facilities represent are hundreds of thousands of square feet of warehouse space, logistics centers, manufacturing centers. They represent hundreds and thousands of millions of economic activity, thousands of jobs. It represents economic growth and activity that doesn't currently exist in the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County, and the state of Missouri. We're not borrowing that from Chicago. Up until now, the vast majority of cargo transport coming out of other parts of the world, particularly the Far East, have come through on domestic airlines. They've come through in conjunction with passenger airlines. The political pressure that our country is going to exert on our trade partners to increase their exports over these next 5 and 10 years is going to open up trade opportunities for our country that we've never seen before. We do have emerging middle classes all around the globe, in particular in the Far East, that we've not seen and we won't see in this country. This is very analogous to us in the 19th century, us in the early 20th century, when we were growing and expanding our middle class. Demand for our goods will increase exponentially, and trade will occur. So on the macro sense, the big picture sense, 20 years forward, this is something, this is an industry that doesn't exist today. It's trade that doesn't exist today in this country. It's GDP growth, both at the national and the state level, it doesn't exist today. We're not borrowing someone's Home Depot. We're not competing against Illinois or Iowa or Kansas for the next business. We're actually creating economic activity that I know we've got some information today about a study that's done, but I think these studies are all flawed, and because I think what they do is they overestimate economic activity for those things that fail, but they underestimate to the second or third power those things that transform. And on a macro sense, this has the capacity to transform. Now, in the micro sense, let's get real. We know the state of our economy. We know our unemployment rate is above the national average. We look at places like St. Louis City and St. Louis County, where I'm very proud to represent both those regions, and we see evidence of declining economic activity. And there's no better evidence of that than by population decline. People talk with their feet. We lost a significant percentage of St. Louis City. That was headline news. What was most discouraging to me was the population loss in St. Louis County. St. Louis County lost 3% of their population in the last 10 years. And what's left behind? You know, I'm born and raised here. I came back to the St. Louis area about 15 years ago. And I have a passion for the city of St. Louis. I love the city of St. Louis. And when I first returned home and I went to visit some of my favorite places on the north side, it was discouraging to see the changes the city had undergone in the 15 years I was away. In the 15 years since I've been back, it's been really discouraging to see that the blight in the city extend into the county. Just, you know, it's hard to tell now where North St. Louis City ends and where North St. Louis County begins. And we look at the burden that places like that can place on the entire state, and I wonder to all my colleagues here across the state is we're the economic engine, St. Louis City and County, but what if we weren't? Or what if that engine produced 90 or 80% of what it's produced in the past? What plan do you have to pick up the slack? I look at this in the micro sense is it's perfect timing. It's an opportunity to take advantage of duress. You know, Senator, you mentioned things like the Fenton plant in your district and the closed Hazelwood plant, I think it's in Senator Green's district. And it doesn't take a demographic scientist to drive around the St. Louis City and County area and see the decline and wonder out loud, how does this turn itself around? And so in a micro sense, the opportunity is right there. Now, you'd mentioned before about the fact that your time in office, you've seen us have to deal with the fiscal realities of the state, and we've had to reduce programs. And you put forward what I think is a step, not in back, but a step forward economically, has potential to be a step forward economically. And you wonder about the fact that, why is it that Missouri can actually even think about this? You know, again, all those years of economic growth, when all the states all around us are making all their promises and locking into all their fixed cost structures, and even then couldn't balance their budgets on a consistent basis, we as a state, the fiscally conservative state that we are, kind of went along in our business and stuck to our knitting and did things we know we could afford to do and didn't extend ourselves to such a great degree. And you wonder, well, why did we do all those things all those years? It would be easy to go back 5 and 10 years ago and say, oh, look at Missouri. It's just kind of humming along, doing its thing. It's not forward thinking like all these other states. Look at all the things Illinois is doing that Missouri's not doing. And the reality was, is we were being fiscal stewards, prudent stewards, but in the business world, what we did is we kind of kept our powder dry. We didn't get ourselves into a situation we couldn't get out of. I would suggest, and I do have the same understanding that you, Senator Schmidt, that this legislation doesn't exist anywhere else in the country right now. I think it's for a couple of reasons. I think the first reason is I don't think any other state could do this, certainly not in the middle part of the country. Certainly not in the middle part of the country.
Three senators are on the floor at the same time. Senator from Cole, for what purpose do you rise?
I'm sorry to interrupt this debate, but I do seek unanimous consent for the introduction of some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you again. I apologize to the two senators. It gives me great pleasure today to introduce up in our gallery here to my right and to your left, the third and fourth grade class from St. Thomas the Apostle School. There's 18 students are here with their teachers, Miss Rachel Minx, and several parent chaperones, including Thomas Besson, Corin Puello, sorry, I practiced and I messed that up, Brenda Schell, Sarah Otto, and Kelly Weberg. They are touring the state capitol, the governor's mansion, and Supreme Court as part of their field trip today. Please help me and make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senator from Cole please stand and be recognized? Thanks for coming to the Capitol. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I also seek unanimous consent for introduction.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today, to your left and to my right, over on the couch here, we have Dr. Alan Brewer and his wife, Margie. Dr. Brewer and I are on staff together at the hospital in St. Joseph, and he's a cherished colleague of mine. Today, he's here representing the Missouri Society of Osteopathic Family Physicians, of which he is a board member, and I would ask that he and his wife please rise and be recognized by the Senate.
Let's recognize the guests from the Senator from Buchanan. Thanks for coming. Senator from the 15th, proceed.
Senator from the 24th, renew my inquiry.
Very good. I think that was very timely. I want to thank the Senator from Cole and the Senator from Buchanan. Gave me time to stop and recognize the fact that I haven't been calling you the Senator from the 15th. So I'm sorry if I've disrupted the protocol, and I won't do that again.
So well, my master rule breaker didn't catch you.
Well, they did. I think they just did me a favor. My point is to say, I think that this has both things going for it. It has a micro opportunity, meaning in the short run, that the opportunity is there for a reason. I think the reason that this legislation is not anywhere else in the country is because the decision makers have decided. If they wanted this legislation to be in some other state legislature, you can bet it would be. It's not in other places for a reason. It's in other places for us to make this opportunity, to make the deal happen.
Well, you know, I think a lot of other, Senator, to your point, I think a lot of other states are starting to recognize now and wonder how we've gotten the largest trading partner in the world at the table, at the point that we have now. And we have now had a plan that they have acknowledged is wise and imaginative and provides a path for all of us to succeed. And my concern is if we don't seize that opportunity, now that the game plan has been set forth, that it's not all that hard for somebody to understand what we've done and try to get to that point and where we're at now. Because you talked about the trajectory that we're on. You know, we all want to be optimistic and we want to talk about good things that are happening. But if you look at it, we're going to be debating very soon the loss of a congressional seat. It's my view, we won't be in office, whether it's 10 years or probably more like 20 years. We'll be talking about that again in this state. Until we make some bold decisions, and the President Emerson was around yesterday, they got no dog in this fight, but they understand. They want a viable airport. They know having a world headquarters right now in St. Louis is difficult. To have their board members come into an airport that is a ghost town, to have connecting flights all across the country just to get here, they understand what that means for a city and what that hub activity can bring. And I'll talk just briefly, you know, the cargo, it's bigger than just China. Since this has been out there, as I mentioned earlier, there's been inquiries from South African and South American airlines to connect. The landing fees a decade ago in Lambert were basically a dollar. Now they're $8. That just shows you how drastic the decline how far we've fallen. And you have fixed costs. If you can spread those costs along a larger base, which is what we're trying to do, that will help passenger traffic long term. And other stuff's going to happen overnight, but we got to get started, and we've got a real opportunity with a trading partner sitting on the other side of the table.
Now, I too appreciate it, the volunteer work that the President of Emerson undertook. For those of you who aren't aware, beginning 7 or 8 weeks ago, the President of Emerson, who spent 25 years negotiating on the other side of the world in China on behalf of Emerson, he offered his knowledge and expertise. He made a trip to China. He's done a lot of background checks and works with his contacts there. You know, he explains to us when Emerson decides to do something, they do the same thing. They go through all the possibilities, all the possible locations, and they pick one, and then they go forward with that site, and they negotiate with that site, incentives for them to end up in that city. And that's exactly where we are. The reason that there isn't any other legislation anywhere else in the country is because they've decided. They've decided to wait to see what we do these next 6 weeks. And if we don't come through, then as you suggest, then that will be our answer, and then they'll make their next decision. And it's not a decision to either come to St. Louis or we don't come. They're coming. And they're coming on a scale and a scope that we've not seen from them anywhere in the country.
And it'll be another sad chapter of missed opportunities. And I think, Senator, we'll be back here next year having the discussion about reductions. We might be here the next year having that same conversation. And we'll be arguing about where to go, what programs next. But here's the opportunity within this legislative session to capitalize on a growth opportunity. I mean, growing the economy, growing the pie. And we don't see these kinds of opportunities come along very often. In fact, these sort of transformative kinds of opportunities, maybe once in a generation. And we happen to have the pleasure, the honor of serving, having been elected to sit here in this chamber right now, to have this debate and decide, do we do or do we not do? And I understand that a lot of people have a lot of other issues with a lot of other things. But at some point, I think we got to be grown-ups and recognize when an opportunity is looking at us in the face, when it's real, when it's there. And if it doesn't happen, we're not really out anything. Like I said, it's an offer sheet. It's an offer sheet. If you come, if you invest, we've got a path here. And the effects of companies wanting to be closer, as speed matters in this world, in the air cargo business, proximity to a portal, an airport, in the most real sense I can think of, actually matters. In some of these other scenarios, in Memphis, for example, a lot of companies have their R&D folks, high-paying jobs located near the airport. They have a lot of assembly opportunities near the airport. Value-added services, the chain of commerce industry that we just don't have. We don't have it.
We've got Senator, I would suggest that I don't think we've seen what the economic impact this can have. We haven't seen it anywhere else. I think it's bigger than anywhere else. You know, I applaud you for having the courage to bring this forward. The easy thing to do would be not to bring this forward. I know that this can transform and will transform. If we're unable to bring this to bear, I'm going to pray that I'm wrong, because I think the regret we're all going to feel these next 10 or 15 years as we see this opportunity go to some other part of the middle part of the country, I just think we're going to feel a tremendous sense of loss. We'll know that we missed that opportunity that can transform our economy, one that I don't think we've seen in a long, long period of time. So thanks for the inquiry.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator for the 15th.
Inquire the senator from Lewis.
Senator from Lewis, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
Good morning.
I appreciate all the hard work that you put in understanding, being a part of, recognizing opportunities for the agricultural opportunities we have in the state. And I came to you when we filed the bill as the chairman of that committee to sign on to this. And, in the Senate, it doesn't matter that much how co-sponsors. But I thought that was an important statement for us to make. A suburban St. Louis County guy, of chairman of economic development, the ag guy, the chairman of the ag committee, I think that's what this kind of thing can mean for the state.
Well, you mentioned agriculture, and in agriculture we grow things. You talked about growth. This is growth. It is enlarging our economy. It's enlarging it worldwide to new worldwide markets. And a little history lesson. Recently I was down at the Fort Worth stockyards. And, before the railhead got there, they had cattle drives. They drove cattle up to Sedalia, Missouri, to Kansas City, Missouri. Then as the rail went further west, of course, they went to Denver. But, it's all keyed on transportation issues and getting that product to market. Later, the railroad went into Fort Worth, and it was a giant boom for the Texas economy, the agriculture economy in Texas. And really, I think as we look at this opportunity that we have to export a lot of our agricultural products to the new market in China, and actually it's not really a new market, but it would open so many more doors for value-added products that we make here in the United States and here right here in Missouri. You know, those old drovers, those cattle drovers, I think these freight forwarders are the new cattle drovers of today. They're the ones that are rounding up that product and getting it to the place where they're putting it together, just like they were at the railheads back in the 1800s. I think the importance of the livestock value-added commodities that we have, the beef, the pork, some of our specialty grain products that need to find markets overseas, and that the China economy really, really likes. We have a lot of agricultural products, the meat products, that we don't value so high in the United States in our food diet, but they do. So you're adding value to a low-priced product, or what we consider a low-priced product over here. You bring that value up, you help our whole economy.
Well, I think that that's a perspective that I didn't have. I mean, in talking to you, understanding the value of not just what we're selling, but the value of that in new markets, where they might value something differently than we do.
You know, and as we look forward into the future, and that's what it takes a vision to look forward. As these railroads moved across the country, there were some risks taken. But you don't gain anything if you don't take risks. I think we all know that. We went through elections here to be in this body. We took risks. Hopefully we gained something. And as in business, as I look at what I want to do with my business, I have to take a risk, as we all do. It takes a risk, but we have to look forward. We have to be visionaries. We have to look out to the future. And as we look out to the future, food production really has to double in about the next 25 years. And if we can be key in those markets, and that's one thing about St. Louis and being the very center of the country, we are key right here in the center of the country to be able to reach those markets, to have products brought in.
And I think that one of the things I've heard from the discussions with China is they're looking for a food insurance policy. And they know that we're the breadbasket of the world. And those opportunities for us right here to feed more folks, the rising tide lifts all boats, right?
That's right. Lifts all planes in this instance, let's hope. It's the wind below the wings. But as we go forward with this, the opportunities in agriculture are great. We don't even know what the possibilities are, truly. But like I say, as we look forward to feeding the population, and they do have one of the fastest growing populations in the world, the importance to our economy over here, because agriculture is the largest industry in the state of Missouri, it helps us balance our budget with the things that we do, and especially if we can add value to that product. As meat portions, box meat, fresh, put on a plane and sent to a new market. It's an open door, and it is a great chance that we have. It is a chance, but it is a great chance for a growing economy that we don't really have that good an access to right now.
Well, and to even think of it in more of a historical perspective, you know, Missouri is really known for, we've got the Gateway Arch as the gateway to the West, right? You've got Independence, Missouri, the senator from the 11th who represents Independence. Independence was known as the wagon trains moved westward. And what were they looking for? It wasn't necessarily because it was directionally west. They were looking for new opportunity,
right,
for a better life. Right. To have those new opportunities for the next generation to have a better life than they had, that they would have to struggle and sacrifice but that their kid would be able to go to college. And that's the dream that we all share. And my concern is that we are stuck. We're stuck in this body. We're stuck in this state of looking back, of rearranging the chairs, the deck chairs here, right? But this is an opportunity for those new markets and for us to be the place where goods flow in out of, and to. And like I said earlier, great cities, great civilizations, great states have risen by those trade routes opening up, whether it was being a port city or St. Louis in the 1800s or Chicago as it rose, or Los Angeles by the highways connecting. Los Angeles would have never been Los Angeles if you couldn't fly to New York in a few hours. That's the distance, and that's how we have collapsed distance in this world we live in. And there ain't no going back. History will march on. The question for us is, do we want to be in the center of that trade, or do we want to cede that to another city, yet again, filled with regret?
When we have the greatest opportunity there is with a city like St. Louis, with the airport facilities that we have that are, like you said earlier, underutilized, we are missing a huge chance. But to be a visionary and look out to the future, what we can do for our state, for our future generations, for our children, if we miss this, it could be a... something we could look back on later and be very sorry.
Mr. President.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Lawrence, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I request unanimous consent for the introduction of special guests.
See no objection. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On the couch to your left and my right are some good friends from Pierce City, Missouri, Wyatt Bowen, Nathan Bowen, who once interned for me, and I'm confident one day I will go to him asking for a job. Janice Bowen, Doug Bowen, and from Mount Vernon, John Leach and Nancy Smith Leach. And Wyatt is up front on the bench working for the people of Missouri as a page for the day. I ask that he be made a page to serve without compensation unless, Mr. President, you are feeling generous.
Thank you. Would the guests of the Senator from Lawrence please stand to be recognized? Thanks for coming to the Capitol. Pierce City, what a neat town, huh? Senator to the 15th, proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for your inquiry. I appreciate it. The Senator from Polk, I know, had some issues that I wanted to talk to him about. Mr. President.
Senator for the 15th, what purpose?
To inquire the Senator from Polk County.
Senator from Polk, do you yield?
I do.
He does, proceed.
Senator from Polk, thank you.
Morning, Senator. I have a couple of brief questions. I was hearing the Senator from Lewis talk about the ag issues, and I mean, it's a thing to say we're going to export, and it's a good demand over there. And one of the things I'm going to be asking you here in a minute, so, okay, how are we going to do that? It's one thing to say that, but what's in the plan to make sure that St. Louis or that Lambert can be able to ship out beef, grain, and all those things? What is the future plan for that? And I'll ask that in a minute, but a couple of things I just want to, recently in the Wall Street Journal, I just want to read a couple of things about that to go along with kind of what you two gentlemen were talking about. It says U.S. cattle futures hit all-time highs as low feed supplies and a shrinking domestic herd fuel concerns the beef productions won't keep pace with world demands, which means we're behind that already, mm-hmm. trying to keep up with the world demands. Lean hog futures also set higher at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, with some contracts hitting new record highs. Crop futures are near multi-high years. Export demand continues to grow as developing nations have the means to consume more pork and more beef. So from people in my part of the country, part of the state, the question you always get into on these issues is, okay, we're talking about a St. Louis issue, and you brought up a while ago urban and rural. And the question is, you get into sometimes, well, it doesn't do nothing for me, so why do I want to support that? And I guess that's some of the questions I'm asking of you today, is if, and we're talking, and I know the ag chairman got up and spoke about that, but how do we get that done? What is in your proposal that gets cattle to St. Louis, that gets hogs to the airport or the grain? In other words, are we talking, in your proposal, are you talking infrastructure? Are you talking people are going to come in here and make huge amounts of investment? So that's somewhere where I'm headed on for my area.
Yeah. Well, there's two things. One is I think we recognize, number one, the global demand is increasing for these particularly high protein kinds of foods that previously folks couldn't afford, and now they're able to afford, and more people, not just not just over in the Far East, but we're talking in other parts of the world, in South America. So those new markets are opening up. And the question we have is, Chicago is getting all of that traffic right now. And the bill works in two different ways. One is we have the incentive for the freight forwarders to start diverting that traffic to St. Louis because they recognize, but there's safety in knowing there's 26 flights a week. So they'll eat a little bit until we make it something that is sustainable for them. And so to originally get those flights, and then the second piece of it, the critical piece, the sustainability piece, is to have those facilities, and specifically on the ag piece, and I will tell you this, there's actually an additional incentive above the manufacturing, above the assembly, above the distribution for the cold chain facilities. And the cold chain facilities are critical. What they allow you, they're refrigerated warehouses, basically. And what they allow is for the storage of those processed meats, the storage of fresh meat, to be flown and to come. And as I said earlier, the timeliness and the speed actually matters. And what this actually will do also, instead of having the processing plant in Nebraska, you're going to want to be closer because time matters to get your goods to other parts of the world. So maybe that plant is all of us, and this is never going to come through in an economic impact study, but maybe that processing plant is in Northeast Missouri now, as it's connected to Highway 61 with a two-hour drive as opposed to a however drive, to cut down those transportation costs, to make it easier to get those goods from one place to St. Louis, to be stored there and to be flown overseas, to open up those new markets for our farmers, to open up those new markets for our ranchers. The opportunity is real because the facilities that we're trying to get here, and again, if they don't build it and they don't operate and they're not exporting, they don't get a reduction in their tax liability. But if they do, and they blow the lid off this thing, like we're hoping they do, with the capacity that we have, again, our economy is a different, it looks completely different. And so I can tell you, when you look, as a lawyer, whether it's a case or it's a deal, you lead with your best assets. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about the things you got going for you. You focus on that. And the ag component here is the best thing we got going for us because people want it. And more people are going to want it. And if we can make Missouri the place where people come and get it, all of a sudden our economy is growing.
And Senator, do we have people in the state of Missouri that are willing to invest in this?
Absolutely.
I mean, which to me is an importance, too. I understand that you have foreign interests that could come in and could supplement that and buy and sell. But what do we have here in the state of Missouri?
Well, and I think what we got, too, is it's bigger than that because the investment that follows these trade routes is real. And you look at a place like New York or London or any major city, you've got a lot of people investing from all parts of the world, including those countries. But the best example I could give is if you've got a company that has an East Coast facility and a West Coast facility, and they're looking to start to make those locational decisions about consolidation, all of a sudden that distribution, that logistical headquarters is now in the middle of the country. And so we're pulling in investment from other parts of the country. And I think that actually is key because although it is a good thing for us to have Missouri businesses expanding here, it's also important for us to start pulling from the outside, to start having those companies locate here that don't exist, to have those research and development engineers located near where the products are received, to have the equipment, the high-tech equipment that comes from other parts of the world to be assembled here. I will tell you that the thing that really, as I thought through this a lot, the validation from one of our state's great companies, Emerson, that knows China, that knows these markets. Ed Monser had been over to China 104 times, independently. You know, the first thing you want to know is this thing real?
Right.
You know, are they playing us against some other city?
Right.
And they want to make a move. They got problems up there, but they also know that there's some safety in being up there because of all the traffic, all the warehousing, all of the storage opportunities they have. And to create a new part of our economy is that we just don't have right now is important.
So is there anybody compete? Is Chicago, I assume, the main hub right now for them?
Yes.
I mean, that's the only place they go, basically.
Yep.
Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
And they're looking for other resources.
61 out of the 72 million kilos of export flow through Chicago, and they can't handle it all.
Okay. So, all right. Well, I appreciate your work on this, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 15th.
Inquire my good friend, the Senator from Boone.
Your colleague from Boone, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
Good afternoon, Senator. Now, I know this is your inquiry, but I do have to comment. I do. You have a wonderful tie on. Got to congratulate you on your tie.
We look very Ivy League, right?
Yes, but we do. I call this my Jack Danforth tie, because almost every picture you ever see of Jack Danforth, he's wearing this exact same tie.
But neither one of us are Ivy League, right?
No, that's right. We are not.
We just wear the ties.
That's right. I think we're Missouri born, bred. And anyway, thanks for the inquiry. You know, it's interesting. You actually talk about Jack Danforth. You know, studying geography at the University of Missouri with a real interest in geopolitics, it's really interesting that 40 years ago, President Nixon at the time identified China as the emerging world power on trade. And his theory was they are not into political expansionism. They are purely going to be a trade powerhouse. And now 40 years later, that's exactly what we're seeing. And I think we're at a crossroads, and I appreciate the fact that you pointed out the painting dealing with the railroad, because we are at a critical time historically in international trade, because China is the powerhouse that it is, and we have to make a decision whether or not we're going to lament that or whether we're going to embrace that and use our assets to be part of that in a world economy. And, you know, I know that you've inquired of the other senators on some of the ag issues, but, you know, two big ag issues. One is the agricultural production issue, which this, you know, agriculture is still the largest industry in the state of Missouri. Animal agriculture is the largest sector of that, and this is a linchpin, I think, for the next 50 years on ag economic development. But it's not just ag, it's the entire state of Missouri, and it's the other part of agriculture, which is the Monsanto part, the Danforth Plant Science Center. That part which is identifying Missouri currently as a leader in agricultural innovation, and that the role that something like this, which is a direct pipeline to the rest of the world, creates for us. Because if you look out through the beginning of civilization, if you are not on a major trade route, you are not a player.
Right.
Period.
Yep.
And whether it was a walking trail, you know, in Austria between, you know, Germany and Italy, and the development that caused, you know, thousands of years ago, or looking at it now with airport travel.
And those routes, Senator, aren't static.
They're not.
They move. They change over time.
That's
you
right.
Better adapt. Otherwise, you've got a success story like Chicago that arose out of nothing.
Absolutely.
Or if you're on Route 66, right? And
right.
Things change.
I've got a service station on Route 66. I'm set for the next 100 years. Well, wait a minute. Things change, and they do change. And you have to have people in the right positions to recognize that fluidity and that things are going to change. And when those opportunities arise, you got to grab the opportunity. And sometimes they're tough decisions, there's no doubt about it. But you have to look objectively at the opportunities that come about when you're in a position to make a decision that has an impact on that. And I appreciate what you're doing, and I think we are at that position right now, and I think that we need to make the right decision. This is a tremendous opportunity, and again, you inquired the Senator from the 24th. I don't think anybody should think that this is a St. Louis issue. This is a state of Missouri issue. It's an economic development issue. It's one of the biggest issues we've got right now. I support what you're doing. I hope everybody recognizes that.
Well, I appreciate that. I know that if Joplin or if anywhere in the state had the opportunity to be that next bridge to another continent, I would fully support it. It just so happens that St. Louis is in that place. Lambert International Airport, which isn't very international anymore, is in that spot right now, and it's time for us to seize the moment, because I just don't want another Senate 50 years from now talking about another, you know, none of us will be up on a mural.
Well, that may be you up there, and you're on the floor talking about, you know. Trade route to China.
It might capture my bald spot if it's from the gallery. But I'm
Make sure they paint you from the front, not from the back. But, you know, the precursor to the bigger picture trade route to other parts of the world is the part of the trade route that we already have, which is the network of the highway system that connects the rural areas to the urban areas in the state of Missouri. And that's one thing that makes this project so attractive, is we have that element of it already. That's already in place, and it's something we can capitalize on.
Well, thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
I appreciate it. Mr. President.
Senator from the 15th.
Inquire the senator from the 5th District in St. Louis City.
Senator from the 5th District.
Yes,
do you
I do.
Yield?
I will yield.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
And I want to thank you for your leadership on this and recognizing the opportunity that we have here.
Yes.
And the ability for city to work with county,
yes,
for urban to work with rural,
yes,
Republican to work with Democrat,
yes,
and recognizing that economic development isn't a partisan issue, it is a real opportunity. So
absolutely,
I appreciate your position.
And amen, Senator. You ran the whole litany there. Absolutely. Thanks for inquiring of me, Senator. And this is a very, very important bill. As you mentioned, you talked about the early history of the region with the Eads Bridge, of course, bringing both halves of the country together. Very important, very major economic development tool at that time. The St. Louis region, of course, was very active, but so was the Illinois side of the region, as a matter of fact. We had the rail yards, we had the stock yards, we had the steel companies. So even then, the entire region was growing and burgeoning, and we attracted population. And here we have the opportunity to do that once again, to attract population back into the region, which we have lost. We've said many times that the St. Louis region is 47% of the general revenue. We've lost people. We've lost companies. We cannot keep that edge if we continue to lose. This is a time when we have to act and act rapidly. And that's one of the questions that I have for you, the urgency of getting this legislation done and the impact that it will have on the deal. Now, my understanding is that the Chinese government has completely backed this particular operation that they would like to see happen in St. Louis because of the downtime in Chicago. They are just, you know, flying into Chicago is problematic. Even though it's short for us, it's still problematic. Tell me again what the impact is when you fly into Atlanta or you fly into Chicago or many of our major cities. You see a lot of warehouse activity. Mm-hmm. Which means our airport could look like that as well. There's a lot of land that's vacant. I imagine most of it has been purchased by someone. So we get a lot of backroom operation in this particular legislation that you have there. Let's talk about the indirect benefit. We know directly what it will do with the freight forwarders and the Chinese and those people who can put the products into Lambert to be flown out of the country. What about the indirect benefit?
Yeah, I mean, it's economic activity that we just simply don't have right now. Clustering of warehousing, clustering of cold chain facilities,
no,
clustering of manufacturing for opportunities that we just don't have right now. And I'll tell you, the other issue with Chicago is you can't grow. They have real capacity issues.
Right.
And so it presents an opportunity for us, but I'll tell you just in broad strokes where the negotiations have been.
Okay.
A couple years ago, a lot of important people brought a delegation over. The declaration was made, no place better than St. Louis, no
Absolutely.
Place better, the center of the center.
Right.
All that's real. The discussion then goes from top political leaders. This is where we'd like to go. They got a 5-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually hit on most of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But they got a 5-year plan. This is part of it. But when you start getting down, and so when those leaders are putting pressure on the bureaucrats who actually make the deal, Shanghai,
yes,
which is the New York City of China,
right,
trying to figure out how they're going to make this thing work, you know, they're talking about monetizing the risk here.
Yes.
And what they need to know is that there's a path. And what this provides is a plan,
mm-hmm,
set forth saying, we have a way of dealing with what your concern is, which is there's nothing around the airport.
Right.
You know, we might get a couple token flights,
right,
but it goes away. And then when it goes away, it's never coming back.
Right.
And so how do we have that infrastructure that increases demand long term so that we get to 20 flights a week?
Mm-hmm.
And when we get there, if this thing's humming, the opportunity, the logistical businesses that want to be near it, the value-added businesses that want to be near it,
right,
the chain of commerce.
Yes.
That,
the
like
chain
I said
of commerce
before,
is very important.
This is new. This is new.
Right.
And I just hope we're willing to accept that opportunity because this bill, as I said before, is a big poster on the wall of the world.
It
says,
is.
We got all these assets. We got a great highway network.
Right.
We got river. We got rail. Okay.
Right.
But we don't have what you need, which is the support around it.
Right.
But we got a plan to get there. So come and invest here.
Right.
Create your jobs here.
Right.
Build your buildings here.
Right.
Make your locational decisions here.
Right.
And 20 years from now,
It also gives the individual an opportunity to be a part of that commerce. That you start new businesses, you create a new economy with new jobs, you attract workers back into the area. Excuse me. You create a new tax base for the communities that surround the airport, because there'll be a lot of activity from Woodson Terrace and Kenlock and Berkeley and all the way to St. Charles County. I mean, it's going to be a phenomenal hit for us on this second phase. And your particular legislation is the one that gives the second phase that makes the Chinese very interested in coming to St. Louis. Am I right about that? Because they're ready to move right now. They could fly a plane in today. We're the ones who have some things to move in a short period of time. And talk to me about that time frame, Senator. What do we do here when we get this out of the
Senate? They want to land this summer.
They want to land, and
they
want
to land this summer, and so the next 6 weeks are obviously critical. And
when we do this, we would have an emergency clause on this particular legislation.
I don't think it's on the bill right now, but
it's not, because if not, it wouldn't go into effect until August, and we could be past our prime if we wait till August. Is that possible?
Are they the Senator from Cape is, I think, suggesting that we have an emergency clause. but I think time is of the essence here.
I'll tell you in this
world of commerce, the reason why it exists is because time is of the essence.
Yes.
You need to get something that's expensive or perishable to another part of the world quickly.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason you're spending money on the flight. And so that demand will continue to increase along the spectrum of products and commodities. And the question really is do we want St. Louis to be a landing pad for that? Do we want St. Louis to be the place where Missouri exports are being sent across the globe? That's the question.
Well, I think that's very important, too, and from the region, because we can, within a day's drive or half an hour flight, we can draw in goods and commerce from the middle of the country very quickly.
Right. That's the idea of being in the center of the center. And that,
absolutely.
The
Census Department just told us that the center of the universe essentially is right here in mid-Missouri, so we need to capitalize on that.
Yep.
We need to use that as part of our strategy, don't you think? Now, let's talk about what happens if we don't get it, Senator. What's the impact of the loss if we don't take this opportunity at this point in time?
You know, I think we'll stay on this trajectory we're on.
And that trajectory is?
We'll be talking about, I think in our region, we'll be lamenting it. I think we'll be wondering when the next thing is coming. We'll be talking about loss of population.
We'll
be talking about our state not keeping up with other states in the census. We'll be talking about the loss of congressional seat. We'll be talking about all of the additional cuts we need to make in our budget moving forward. We'll be talking about the fact that we don't have money for education. And while all those decisions need to be made to balance the budget, there also has to be a part, if we're looking at this as a business, okay, there also has to be a decision to grow, too.
Yes.
And you don't do it at every turn.
No.
You don't do it willy-nilly.
No.
But when you see an opportunity to make an investment, when you have the opportunity to encourage the world to come here, I think that's an opportunity that we ought to seize and something we ought to take very seriously. And I know that there's a lot of discussions about a lot of different things here.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope people recognize the transformative effect this can have. And I hope people can see that. And if we're to change course here, we better start thinking about where those opportunities are going to come next, because we got one right now, and that's what this legislation deals with.
We'll become pretty stagnant is the fear, I think. That's my concern. If we don't take
it, I hope I'm wrong. I hope.
Oh, well.
You know, I mean, but you look at, honestly,
we've been in the General Assembly.
Think about some of the great companies that fueled all the corporate headquarters that we lament losing, the Anheuser-Busch's, the Pure, you know, a lot of those began
They
in
did.
The late 19th century.
Yes, they did.
At the beginning of the 20th century.
Right. And fortunes have changed.
And when we were a magnet for the creative class, when we were the magnet for intellectual capital, when we were the magnet for real capital, when this was a place to be because of the locational advantage.
Right.
And this is a way for us to, in many ways, a redemptive moment, for to regain that, rightful position we have as a hub of commerce.
I agree.
And by the grace of God, I mean, St. Louis, you know, was... That's the reason why the city was the city.
It was growing.
You know? And I mean that in the broadest sense.
We had a pretty lively history as well, too, Senator. But I won't go into that right now. We were pretty lively around the turn of the century, St. Louis was. But this is an international opportunity.
But wouldn't it be great, instead of celebrating the 100th anniversary of the World's Fair, we're talking about actually getting a World's Fair?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be... I mean, we're... I love the area that I grew up in, and there's a lot of great people and a lot of good companies. But I think we need to start looking forward a little bit too.
And I think we need to raise Missouri to the specter of having an international recognition, because we speak all the time about our high school and college kids. When they come out, are they able to compete in a world marketplace? This gives Missouri an opportunity to give them an opportunity. It's China. It's not California asking us to send goods to them to send to China. This is China asking St. Louis region, can we do this here?
Right.
And our competition with Austin, Texas, or Indianapolis, or Memphis, or Kansas City, Kansas, that is, that's our competition. And we are good enough to get this. We're good enough to do it. We have the bones and the infrastructure in the city to get this done, and we need to have it because it puts Missouri at a different level. If we don't grasp this opportunity, we lose a great deal, not just today, but down the line. For our children and grandchildren, I know you have children, I have grandchildren.
If we want our kids to come back here.
We want our kids to come back and stay. We want Missouri to be competitive. We want to raise it up at that level. And we've got great geographic opportunity and to really get this done. And a loss not to get it. Now, let's talk on the hard side for a moment about the tax credit issue. Hot issue here in the General Assembly as well. You know, we are considering a bill to cut many of our programs or eliminate them, but yet we have some bills in the pipeline that are tax credit bills. They serve a purpose. In this regard, the program that you've set up as tax credit has a sunset. Am I correct about that? How many years is that, Senator?
It's an 8-year sunset.
Okay.
It is capped. Like I said, the accountability built into this, before you ever receive the benefit, you will have made a multi-million-dollar investment. You will be operating a business in the state of Missouri.
Yes.
And that redemption is streamed each year. You got to prove over 5 years that you have that activity that we're seeking. So the accountability that's built in here, I'd put it up against any program we've got in state.
So we have a mechanism where we can incent businesses to start up and meet with us.
The investment on the front end.
Absolutely.
We got the investment on the front end.
Okay.
And we know that, and look, a business isn't going to make that decision unless they know planes are landing and this is a good place to be.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the inquiry, Senator.
I appreciate
your support, and I look forward to moving together on this.
Absolutely.
With all the broad coalition we talked about earlier, and make the right decision. Mr. President.
Senator for the 15th.
Would you lay this bill on the informal calendar?
The bill will be laid on the formal calendar. Senator from the Clay, what purpose do you seek recognition?
I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. President, in the upper gallery, we have Dr. Robert Francine and his beautiful wife, Pat, that are here with the 11th and 12th grade students from Eagle Heights Christian School in my district in Kansas City, Missouri. And if they would stand, I would appreciate it if the Missouri Senate would make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senator from Clay please stand and the body make them feel welcome. If there's no objection, the chair would like to also introduce some special guests. We have the fourth graders from Sweet Springs in the upper gallery. And if they would like to stand, the body make them feel welcome. Senator, the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 72.
Order of business, informal calendar, Senate bills for perfection, Senate Bill 72, Senator from the 8th. What purpose?
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 72 be taken from the informal calendar for perfection.
You heard the motion of the Senator from 8th. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 8th.
Mr. President, Senate Bill 72, much like the Health Care Freedom Act, better known as Prop C, in August 2010, by a vote of the people in the great state of Missouri, would require the Attorney General to seek restitution from the federal government to have the federal government enforce immigration. I do have a Senate substitute. It has been distributed. I ask for a waiver of the Senate substitute.
You want to send your substitute forward? If there's no objection, the reading will be waived.
Senate substitute just adds the ballot language for November.
Would you like
2012.
To move for the adoption of the substitute?
I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
All right. Would you like to explain your bill now?
Okay. This bill, the substitute just adds the ballot language. Once again, the bill would require the Attorney General, upon a vote of the people, to sue the federal government to enforce immigration law.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from the 8th. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Clay, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Morning, Senator.
Morning.
Your bill is asking the Attorney General to do his job.
Pretty much.
Is he doing anything over there?
I don't necessarily need to comment on it. I think he's doing a lot of things. I hope he would redirect in this form and fashion. I think that we've got some statistics here where the Highway Patrol, about 40% of the people that they detain are told to be released from ICE, and
right.
I think it's the right thing to do for them to take all illegals and deport them, and the federal government's not doing that. And so
Senator, I just never miss an opportunity to kick around a former colleague. And so the former senator from Cass, let's see, we've had to get on him because he is not enforcing he's not working with regard to the Turner decision, I believe. We're working on him on that. And he didn't help us out when it came to the Health Care Freedom Act and decided not to get our state involved in that lawsuit. And depending on...
And that's exactly why we go a step further and require him to do this and with this legislation. We do a little bit further than Prop C. We actually have it in the language that we require him to seek restitution.
With regard to the immigration.
Right.
So he's not doing that either. Senator, I am just absolutely amazed because the former senator from Cass used to be a member of the Senate Redhead Caucus, and I'm a proud member of that caucus. And we redheads are not lazy. And I understand that Senator from the 15th is trying to get in there, and if you ever grow your hair
back, but it's not, I don't know if it'll be red.
We can dye it red.
I had red curly hair.
Well, that's correct. And the senator from St. Francois, if he had hair, it would be red. And Senator, I know that red-headed senators are not lazy. Therefore, I have to assume that the red-headed former senator from Cass that's now in the big red brick building across the street, he's in a red brick building, he's not doing anything. I'm just not sure. He doesn't even come over here to show us any love anymore. He doesn't even show up in the Missouri Senate.
We'll have to defend the former senator. He did have me over, and I did have a conversation with him over a lunch. So,
and
he's
did,
been over here in this building, and he did see me over here as well. So
okay.
Well, he has come. I have at least talked to him twice this year. I would say that probably only statewide office holders that have done that, other than the lieutenant governor,
right?
I've talked to him multiple times.
Well, the former senator from Cass has not shown up in my office, so I will, again, never miss an opportunity to kick him around on the floor of the Missouri Senate, because apparently we have to keep telling him to do his job, and that's a problem, and he's just not coming over here to see us. That's a problem, and so I'm not exactly sure what he's doing. But whatever it is, I'm just happy that you're prompting him to make sure that he gets off his duff and does what every good red-blooded, red-headed former senator should be doing, which is their job.
Thank you,
Senator.
Much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
I'd like to inquire of the Senator of the 8th.
I do.
In the past several years, there have been measures that we have put into law to decrease the number of people who are undocumented in the state of Missouri. And by filing this bill, my question to you is, are we not doing a good enough job?
I don't think it has anything with the state. It has to do with the federal government not doing their job.
But you have to understand, when we have dealt with the issue of immigration previously, it has absolutely everything to do with federal law and state law being able to be meshed together, since we know that we have to work with the federal government, and our sheriffs now have a duty, something that has been implemented in law, to seek out those who are undocumented. I'm trying to figure out how previous legislation is not answering your concern that is spelled out in Senate Bill 72.
You bring a great point up, and here's the crux of your point. Immigration is a federal issue, and this bill goes to that point and asks the federal government, forces them to go to court and justify why they're not doing their job. I mean, they want to do a lot of things, but they don't want to do their job, and that is enforce the borders. And immigration is a federal issue.
So
that's why we're doing this legislation.
Let's walk through this really quickly. So, okay, the Attorney General, and I do think that he has some responsibilities here, but the Attorney General
appreciate you recognizing
just
that.
Simply says, and I didn't support him when he ran, but, you know, everybody knows that. The Attorney General has the responsibility to communicate with the immigration department that we have, or ICE, to move undocumented immigrants out of the state of Missouri. So how does that happen? So the Attorney General just says, hey, federal government, do your job. Is that it? How do they do the job?
I think he files suit to recoup.
And how much does that cost us?
You know what? I've got the fiscal note right here, and according to his office, that he can absorb the duties within his current office.
Okay,
the fiscal note is zero.
So how much does this bill cost? When you put a measure,
the bill is zero.
But when
the Secretary of State basically says that we're having an election already on November, that it's not going to cost any more to put this on the ballot.
So why don't we do something where we can ensure every individual in the state of Missouri who is a legal document have a job? Why are we putting this on the ballot? And what does it mean? I'm trying to figure out what this means, other than saying, hey, do your job.
Well, there's other states. Arizona is currently in a lawsuit with the federal government on enforcing immigration law. The Attorney General from Oklahoma the person that is running for Attorney General.
And do we have the kind of, are we a border state? Are we a border state?
Senator, we are not a border state.
Okay,
we're a border state to Oklahoma.
So the issue of immigration in the state of Missouri is by far different than what the immigration issue is in Texas or in Arizona or any of the other border states. Can you tell me how many undocumented immigrants we have in the state of Missouri?
Obviously, since they're undocumented, it's kind of hard to say, but
Highway Patrol actually has a duty to make counts. And the legislation that we've passed previously, you and I have passed in the House, deals with the count of undocumented immigrants.
But,
and from all the numbers I'm looking at, we've actually reduced the number of undocumented immigrants that we have in the state because of that previous legislation. So I'm trying to figure out how big the problem is and how much money are you willing to spend in the state of Missouri to address an issue that is not a concern.
Well, according to some estimates, we have over 65,000 people here illegally, and it's costing taxpayers somewhere in the neighborhood of $194 million.
And where did you get that number from?
Federal for Immigration Reform. Information. I'd be glad to get you.
Are those the people out of St. Charles?
I'd have to go back and tell you. I don't know.
Yeah, the people who are in St.
I don't have the article here.
in front of me.
Did a lady by the name of Janet Renner come to your committee hearing on this?
No.
All right. I just have to look out for her. She's far, far, far out there. But so when a sheriff, when a police officer apprehends a person that they suspect being an undocumented immigrant, they go to the local jail, the municipal jail, mm-hmm. right? And what happens at that point after they're held?
Well, I want to go back to your previous question. You just mentioned, why are we doing this? What's the big impact to Missouri? You do know underneath the census regulations that every person, regardless of their citizenship, is counted. And other states like Texas and Arizona are increasing the number of congressmen and women.
But we're not in Texas. This is Missouri.
No, I'm pointing out here, we're losing a congressional seat, and largely to the fact that we don't have a high.
So we should have more undocumented immigrants.
No. We need the federal government to do their job.
I'm just trying to get it straight.
We need the federal government to do their job, and if they would do their job across the United States.
We may have another Democratic congressional seat if we did.
We might. There you go. We might. And you might be able to run for that seat.
I think so. I'd win.
But with the current way that works, there's a number of, obviously the border states are going to have higher more congressional representation, and we're going to lose congressional representation. So that's another reason why we need the federal government to do their job.
Okay, so here's what I'm trying to get to. A police officer apprehends a person who is suspected of being undocumented. Now, they may truly be undocumented, and they
mm-hmm.
may not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you have to go through a process to try to figure out what their legal status is. Can you tell me what that process is?
Well, once they find out the person is undocumented or illegal.
What do they go through? What is the process?
Well, I would assume that they would take their documents. They would take their identification, whatever is given to them, and they would run that person through their
database. So I have a question. Do you always carry your license with you, or that neat little badge that we have now in the Senate?
No, but if I'm arrested and I
need to
get it, I
can get
it.
So you think every single person, if they're, just out doing whatever they're doing, do you think that they would always carry their license with them or some piece of identification with them? I'm just trying to get into the process.
I think that if they didn't have it and they needed it, they could probably call someone that could get it. Like, I don't have my ID on me right now, but I could definitely call somebody in my office and get it.
Do you still get one call when you're in jail? I don't know. I've never been in jail, so.
Yes. You can call your attorney.
So the call is either to your attorney or your call is to the place where your ID is being held to that person. So which call do you make?
If you have
two choices, which one do you make?
I think you're going to call your spouse probably and get your ID and have them get
your
attorney.
But if you're not married, I'm not married. So.
Call your significant other.
That would be funny. They may want me to stay in jail. So here's my other question. So after they figure out what the status of this individual is, what happens next?
Well, if they were undocumented or illegal, they would obviously call ICE, ICE, and ICE would then take the information and, according to the statistics I have from the Highway Patrol, ICE basically will take in 60% of those people thereabouts, and then the 40% they say these are not violent offenders.
And how long does that take?
My bill does take
48 hours.
My bill has to do with the federal government doing their
important.
Job.
This is very important because your bill deals with the coordination between the federal government and local municipalities and others.
My bill,
essentially,
this bill by a vote of the people. Missourians are going to get a chance to vote on this. So if the Missourians don't think there's a problem, they can say no. That's a waste of resources.
But,
let's not do that.
But, Senator,
but I think overwhelmingly
here's
you're going
to
see
to
a number of people
you, Senator,
think it's the right thing to do.
All of us need to understand the process where.
Let's keep the conversations down so that the senators can hear each other's. Proceed, Senator. Senator from the 34th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I would seek unanimous consent for the introduction of special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today we have with us someone who has done some amazing work over his life to help all of us. His name is Howard Charney, and he's the Senior Vice President of Cisco Systems. In 1980, Mr. Charney co-founded 3Com, which developed the progenitor of the Ethernet, and he later invented the fast Ethernet, and which we all use on a daily basis in order to access the Internet. He's accompanied today. He's here on the, over on the right, to my right and to your left, and he's accompanied by Ms. Roseanne Bischus and Scott Willett here of Jefferson City and Mary Barnsdale, and I would ask that they please rise and be recognized by
the guests of the Center from Buchanan. Please rise and the body make them feel welcome.
Here's what I'm trying to get at here. It's very important for this body to understand what the entire process is to warrant the legitimacy of this bill. And so my question is, again, after the police department contacts ICE, it takes how long for ICE members, ICE
I'm not an expert on this. I don't think that.
But this is very important, though.
I think the assumption is
that our police officers aren't doing their job, number one.
No, I'm not
and
saying
it's also
officers
the assumption
job.
That there's
I'm
no,
the federal government's not
there's
doing
no
their job. There's a
communication
big difference between
ICE
the job
and the municipal government. So what I'm trying to figure out, again, is in this process, who's at fault? Is it our police officers, our sheriffs, or just automatically ICE?
I think the federal government's not deporting everyone we called in, and I think that that's something they need to do.
How many ICE offices do we have in the state of Missouri?
That'd be a good question, and I think that the federal government should increase it.
But
if
you
we
should
don't
already
have enough.
Know that, though. How many offices are in the state of Missouri?
I don't know.
Do you know
obviously
if there's
not
one
enough.
Close to you?
Obviously not enough. Because they're not, I mean, they're letting 40% of the
so
people that are detained.
If they're not enough, why didn't you communicate yourself with federal government, since this is such a problem?
We as the state of Missouri have made a substantial
Do you have an forward. Immigration issue in the place that you represent, your district?
No.
Okay.
I think we have an immigration issue in the United States. And I think the federal government is doing
a
lot
we're
more
not a border
than they
state.
Need to do. And I think they need to focus on the things that they're designed to do, and that is secure our borders.
But we're not secure our borders. But Missouri is not a border state unless you count the Mississippi River as a border or the Missouri River as a border of some sort. So, I mean, in this conversation, as we're talking about border states, and what happens in immigration and documented people coming into this country, I really want to know the significance, the number of people who are coming into Missouri. I mean, I'm not seeing what the problem is.
Well, when I see that Highway Patrol and other agencies are told by ICE to release 40% of the people that they call in, I see that as a problem. Those are people that are here undocumented, illegal, and they need to be deported. And I think this is a step forward, and I think there's other states that have taken steps like this. And, you know, Oklahoma, a bordering state of ours, the person running
but
for
Attorney
General...
But not a bordering state of
no,
this country.
No, it's not. But the attorney, the person running for Attorney General sees this as an issue, and it's a platform issue for him to run for Attorney General.
It's been good for y'all for a very long time now to run on immigration issues. Let's get out all the illegals,
well,
why don't we?
I see illegal immigrants taking jobs from.
For y'all.
I see illegal immigrants taking jobs from people in the state of Missouri, and I think.
And why didn't you report that then? Since you know it's illegal, why didn't you report
well, I see
it to
in
the
news.
Government?
It's been reported, but I mean you.
But
well,
you said you've seen
just,
it, and I'm trying
we,
to figure out
if it's
just
the
news personally.
INS tells the Highway Patrol to release 40% of the people that they detain. I mean.
Can you tell me about the Secure Communities program?
No.
Do you know about the Secure Communities program?
Say again?
Do you know about the Secure Communities program?
No.
Okay, that's quite important if you're trying to pass this bill. It's a program between local, you know, municipal governments and ICE. And do you know how many counties in the state of Missouri participate in the Secure Communities program? Don't know about the Secure Communities program. I would highly suggest when we have a break later on that you look at what the Secure Communities program actually is and how they are working with ICE currently to address the issue of, I don't like to say illegal immigration, but undocumented immigrants that are in the state. There are 27 counties that are currently participating, and there are more counties in the state that have an interest in having the number of these individuals reduced. I am concerned, Senator, that by putting this language on the ballot, which I understand there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to put on the ballot, but by putting this on the ballot, we're really not addressing the issue. We're simply saying the Attorney General needs to do his or her job. But what does that mean? I always want to ask, what does that mean? We could put a measure on the ballot right now that says, do you agree that every single Missourian has a job and gets paid well with full benefits? Yeah, we could put that on the ballot too, but what does that mean? What does it really mean? And so, you know, this is something that we've had to deal with before. I'd rather have a piece of legislation that actually puts teeth in immigration laws. Right now, our Attorney General has a responsibility. You have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to address people who are undocumented, and I try to do that. I'm concerned about those families that are of mixed status. You know, the Attorney General is not going to deal with that either, because it's not spelled out in your bill. There are mothers who are of legal status and the father is not of legal status. The children are of legal status. And are you willing to separate a family? Do you want to separate a family just because one of the parents is undocumented? Your bill does not address that.
No, I'm just trying to get the federal government to do its job.
Yeah, but this is a concern. This is not as shallow as you think it is. This is a huge concern. Keeping families together. You know, I try to be a good Catholic, and I'm sure you're trying to be a good whatever you are, too. But I don't believe that families should ever be separated, number one. And your bill is so shallow, it does not deal with the intricacies of immigration, period. If we do not spell out,
I think going to the voters is not shallow. I think when we put stuff before,
but you need a strategy plan. You need a strategy plan. We need to talk this out. We can't just simply say to the Attorney General, do this job, but not express to him the intricacies of immigration.
I want to give the Attorney General the latitude.
Here's my other question. Do you think the Attorney General is aware and cognizant of all of the immigration laws that exist currently?
I had a brief conversation with
him. Are you familiar with all the immigration laws that exist currently at the federal level? I know I try to be a student of it, but by far I do not know all the laws dealing with immigration.
Well, I'm not an immigration attorney,
so why don't you put in your bill that the Attorney General also needs to learn all the federal laws dealing with immigration? That's not in this bill. And since we're at it, why don't we tell every single Missourian, please read up on your federal laws dealing with immigration? Then we can completely have a conversation, because the law that rules is the federal legislation. If you want to change the federal guidelines on dealing with immigration, talking about status and benefits and all those other kind of things that we've considered, then I think that you need to run for Congress. We all need to run for Congress so that we can change what the federal laws say. But without an understanding of what the federal guidelines are in regards to immigration, I don't think we can pass this and truthfully do something good for the people of Missouri if we don't understand all the laws that impact immigration.
You know, I think the thing we have to understand is, are there people here that are legally, are they taking taxpayer dollars? And the answers are yes and yes, and therefore...
And how is my question. How?
If the federal government would enforce the laws and deport people...
I
want to
know how
they're
taking benefits right now. They can't even get a license. That's another bill. They can't even get a license, though. So tell me, how are they using our benefits. Again, benefits are defined in federal law, but I'm sure that the people voting for this measure haven't read what a benefit is in the immigration law.
I trust the jury.
Have you read what benefits are in the immigration, the federal law? Have you read that, what a benefit is? But they're taking benefits. You're saying, but undocumented immigrants are taking benefits.
They're taking taxpayer dollars, I think.
How? How?
There are a number of them in prison. And I'm not advocating to take them out of our prison and deport them.
Wait a minute. Okay, let's go back. Here's the process. There is an undocumented immigrant that is identified. They are in a municipal jail. Prison, jail. They're trying to figure out whether or not they are of status or they're not of status. And you're saying it's a benefit to an undocumented immigrant
to be in that municipal jail?
Because that's essentially what you just said.
I'm saying they're taking taxpayer dollars.
How?
I just told you. They're in our prisons. They're in our jails. They're in our schools.
Here's my next question. How many undocumented immigrants are in Missouri prisons?
You know what? We called the correction, the Department of Corrections, and they don't have that.
You know what? But they do. But they do, Senator.
Well, here's what I recall in the first year
that we had the immigration reform committee. I remember there were a list of undocumented or a list of people from different countries, and I asked them to read every single country that is represented where those individuals in prison may be undocumented. What was kind of funny when I had them read that out is they included Puerto Rico and they included U.S. Guam, so they didn't even know what they were talking about. But the majority of those people, if you want to put a color on them, they weren't from Mexico, they were from Germany. So when you look at those people who are receiving benefits, let's make sure we say the majority of them are from Germany, because that's where they're from. I'm trying to think through your bill for you, I guess. I think it's very important that we address the entire process in order for us to comply with federal laws. One, we need to understand what those are. It's very difficult. I usually have, when we deal with this immigration stuff, I usually have five or six attorneys because I can't comprehend all of it in my office. But this one, apparently, this one skipped by me. And, you know, I'm looking at it right now, and I'm trying to figure out how effective this is actually going to be.
Well, Senator, I'm willing to work with you on a comprehensive package on immigration.
But you would have to be willing to read some of this federal law.
Sure.
If you can't answer me what benefits undocumented immigrants get, if you cannot tell me what benefits they utilize in the state of Missouri, you can't even go to a county hospital and be an undocumented immigrant and get benefits. You can't even do that right now. So I'm trying to figure out what benefits.
Are you talking about education? If you showed up in the emergency room of a hospital, you're telling me that they would not tend to that patient?
I told you about county hospitals.
You just
that
said
was
county
an
hospital.
Issue that came up a few years ago.
But if they showed up hurt in an emergency room, they would receive care. I would hope so.
Okay. But we don't know.
That's a what if.
I'm asking.
That's not
you,
what if. I bet you there's thousands.
I bet you. But is it a fact? I mean, unless you can call a case or a name or a specific situation, then I don't see how undocumented immigrants are taking anything that is a benefit in our state. And if it's a private hospital, frankly, that's a private hospital. It's not a county hospital. So if it's a private hospital and they see undocumented immigrants, that's a benefit to the private hospital. That's not one of our benefits. You and I have insurance. We could go wherever we want to go. So, Senator, tell me how this bill is going to decrease the number of undocumented immigrants that we have in the state.
Well, I think if the federal government would start enforcing the
border
and the
law. But they're already doing it. Are you saying they're not doing anything in our state?
I'm saying, no, they're 60%.
They're doing 60% job. Is that a good enough job?
Where did you get that? No, but you have to ask yourself, is anyone who has a responsibility doing 100%?
We did a lot of inquiries to try to get statistics
to
on different state agencies,
mm-hmm.
and the Highway Patrol did come back to us. They're the only agency that came back with any information.
And I'm and sure they said the number
60% were actually detained and taken in by ICE. And 40% were not taken in. So
and
they were
why?
Basically released.
And why?
You know, they didn't give us, I mean, I'm sure it's different between each case, but it's probably because they weren't.
Well, here's one of the issues that come up. One of the issues that come up is that they cannot identify this person, whatever computer system. And they cannot prove that this person is legal or undocumented. They can't prove it. And so there are always glitches. You still have to go through the process of the law. You still have to go through that. And if there are people who don't exist in a computer system, then is the municipal government going to keep them in for 30 days, a year? How much does that cost? How much does that cost the city that you live in?
Exactly my point.
Do you want them to pay that?
That's why I want the federal government to do their job. I want the federal government to enforce immigration law. I want, if ICE is called, to them to
But you don't even know what the immigration law is because you haven't read any of the federal statutes.
Well, if you're here illegally, I don't need to exactly know all the federal statutes
on immigration
law. So you
want to separate families. So you want to separate families then?
If you're breaking the law, illegal, what don't you understand about illegal? If you're here illegally, you're breaking our laws. Go home, come back in through the proper channels. If you can come back in, yes, you're breaking the law. You should be going. You should
Senator, I have to say that this is very short-sighted. You know, I respect what you are trying to do. As a person who was on the Immigration Reform Committee for all 5 years, you know, the chairman of that committee was more thoughtful than what this is. To this kind of issue, and he actually...
I'm just concerned about taxpayer dollars, and I just want to let the voters vote on this. So how is that short-sighted? To let the Missourians say, do we want to spend our tax dollars on people that are breaking the laws of our federal government or here illegally? How is that unthoughtful?
Okay, so let's
say, I think that it's more thoughtful for our taxpayers
do you want
to be
get
concerned
a good
about the tax dollars
let's
that we're wasting
on, the
on people that are breaking our
do you
laws.
You want to make sure every single child does not go hungry. Let's put that on the ballot. That should pass real quick. That would be real good because, you know, there are kids who are out there who are just living in horrible situations and who are hungry. If we're trying to make a difference, let's be thoughtful about the process. That is what I'm asking you. Let's be thoughtful. Understand
let's
what
be
the
thoughtful
federal,
of the taxpayers'
let's,
dollars.
Let's understand what the federal laws say. You have just said that you have never read them. You do not know how a benefit
you just
is
said
defined
you have five attorneys
in federal
in your office
law.
To understand them. I mean, reading federal laws, you have to have five attorneys to understand them. Sitting down
I know.
Reading
so
all the federal
have
laws is not something that we're going to be able to accomplish in a given time period. And yes, you'd have to be a lawyer that studies in immigration to be familiar with all federal and state laws on immigration. All I'm trying to do is take and protect Missouri taxpayers by reducing the amount we have to spend out of our tax dollars, our general revenue, increase the job opportunities for people in Missouri by getting rid of people that are here illegally.
So let's look at the other end then. So this law passes. It passes by, 75% of the people in Missouri. And the Attorney General then says, you're not doing your job. Based on what? So tell me what kind of evidence would he use in a lawsuit.
The statistics from the Highway Patrol right there show enough. 40% of the people are released. That's enough for me. Those people are costing the state money because the Highway Patrol...
But is it his obligation to figure out why they're released? Because it doesn't say that in your bill. Is it shouldn't the Attorney General investigate why the 40% are not released? Wouldn't you want him to do that, to figure out why first before he just outrightly sues? No?
No.
Did you just shake your head no? You don't want
I
him to investigate why?
Are you here to tell me that you don't think there's anybody here in the state of Missouri illegal?
Do you That's
think
not the question.
Do you think the
this
federal government's
inquiry.
Doing their job?
Do you That's think not the question.
No.
I know. You know what? Frankly, I do know some people who are undocumented. I do. God bless them. for trying to live the American dream. God bless him.
I just want him to come in the front door. I want him to come in the country legally.
You know, there are some people who come into this country who are legal, and then something expires, their card or their guest card or whatever you call it, expires. And they're still here. They didn't walk or fly or, you know, take a boat into the country and automatically were they illegal. There are some people, and many are from Australia, actually, who come into this country and they work out doing whatever they do. They may be on a student visa, and then that student visa is up. How do you find those people? You only find those people, those, I guess, white-collar, undocumented immigrants, if they get stopped by the police? Because right now it seems as though we colorize the issue. And if you look like a Mexican or you look like someone who's Hispanic, then you get stopped. But what about those people who are from Germany? Or what about those people who are from Australia, who are under the radar? How does the Attorney General, according to your bill, how does the Attorney General deal with that class of people? Because that's not addressed in your bill.
No, my bill simply just requires him to sue.
But he would have to understand the issue. I mean, if you put in this bill, Attorney General, I want you to understand these federal laws and come up with a plan to identify white-collar, undocumented immigrants, then I'd feel you. I completely get you on that.
You know, we modeled this off of Prop C, and it's a referendum. We're trying to be concise. We want to make sure that people understand what they're voting on. If you want to require the Attorney General to do a few things, and you want to put it in this bill for them to understand more about immigration, I'd be willing to look at your amendment.
And that's something that we need to do, because, again, if we're really going to look at this kind of effort, we need to be comprehensive. And just by mere fact that you have not thought about mixed status families, you know, makes me question what the true intent of this
is.
To be on November 2012.
Correct.
Okay, so why is it November 2012?
That's to save taxpayer dollars because there's already an election.
Okay, so why don't we put it on municipal in May or April?
Well, obviously the turnout is larger in November, and we want to hear from the bulk of the people.
So why 2012?
Because that's when the next
statewide
election is.
Because it's a highly political time period. Because it's a
win. More people
more
have the ability
votes,
to come out and vote.
Perhaps.
Are you afraid that it's going to pass? I mean, what's wrong with November 12th?
Senator. You know,
what's wrong with November
12th? I'm not afraid of anything. What I'm afraid of is ignorance. So, I mean, that's why I want to have this conversation with you. You know, seriously, I mean, I'd like to talk about adding an amendment to really spell out what you want the Attorney General to do before he uses state dollars, tax dollars.
Of course, you know,
let's add something in here that says that the Attorney General wants to, or the Attorney General would have to fully comprehend federal law dealing with immigration. Why don't we do that? Do you guys want to write an amendment on that? Let's do that. Because certainly, of all people, wouldn't want to have an ignorant Attorney General. Would you?
I think the Attorney General has staff that's very competent on immigration. I think
they do. So
I
tell
think
me
they
how.
Pretty much understand.
Is there an
the
office
issue?
For immigration? Did you talk to the Attorney General's office about what's the comprehension of your staff when it comes to immigration? Did you ask him that question? No.
I mentioned the bill, and he hasn't gotten back with me on particulars of the bill.
You know, I think I'm the only senator who refuses to have a meeting with him. I think every single senator in this chamber has had a meeting with our Attorney General.
Apparently,
and you're telling me that he's not
Senator
going
from
to...
Clay doesn't agree with that because she apparently hasn't had a meeting.
So there are two. So there are two of us. We're both women from opposite sides of the state. That's interesting. And it's not colorblind either. So the Attorney General responds with y'all, right? He responds to you whenever you have a question. Why has he not gotten back in touch with you about what I just asked about? the comprehension of federal law.
I didn't ask him a question. Be glad to. I think he'd be glad to meet with you, Senator, and sit down, and he could probably tell you.
But this
you
is
about
your bill. This is not my bill.
This is your bill.
This is your bill.
My bill is simply to save taxpayer
dollars.
And prevent people from doing things here in the state illegally, and requires the Attorney General to seek restitution from the federal government because they're not enforcing their laws.
Okay, they're not enforcing their laws, but he doesn't know the law. If he doesn't know the law, how does he know that they're not enforcing the law?
People are here illegally.
If he doesn't know the law, how does he know they're not enforcing the law?
If a person is here illegally,
wait, if you don't know the law, how do you know
illegal?
How do you know that the law is not being followed? If you don't know the law, and if the Attorney General doesn't know the law, how do you know if the law is even being followed or not? By 40%?
Sure, Senator. It's been good talking with you. Mr. President, can you
Senator from the 8th.
Put the bill on the informal calendar.
The bill will be put on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
On the order of business of announcements. Would you make it? On the order of business of announcements, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an announcement. Mr. President, the Small Business Insurance and Industry Committee will be meeting in SCR 1 upon morning adjournment. And, Mr. President, in the same room at 1:30, SCR 1, the Standing Committee on General Laws will be meeting.
Senator from Stoddard, were you seeking recognition?
Mr. President, if you would please refer Senate Joint Resolution Number 10 and Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 54 to the Committee on Ways and Means and Fiscal Oversight.
They will be so referred. On the order of business of announcements, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, I move the Senate stand in recess until 3:10 p.m. this day.
Heard the motion of the Senator from the 23rd. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned or in recess until 3:10.